I'm Scott.
I'm Whitney.
And this is episode 91 of Frankly, My Dear. And this week's episode is brought to you by the award-winning Shadow Dog Productions movie, Dirt Cheap Therapy. So our sponsor contact, Dexter, sent us some copies, so we're going to read it. We'll be receiving our award at the Indie Gathering Convention and Film Festival just outside of Cleveland, Ohio on August 19th, and you can be there. Come watch Dirt Cheap Therapy screen with myself, director John Fouts, and some of the actors on August 19th at 11:30 a.m. Stick around for us to pick up our award at 4 p.m., and if you can't stay for that, at least come watch the movie with us. If you live close enough that you think you can make the trip, contact me at shadowdog.productions@gmail.com. If you do come out, I'll let you pick a DVD from our vault, including our never-before-released comedy feature film, Nerds of Steel. Be the first person to check that out or snag a copy of Dirt Cheap Therapy or Trim Reaper. We'd love to meet any and all Frankly My Dear podcast fans.
Yeah, so if you live in the Cleve.
The Cleve.
Or you're near the Cleve. I wish we could go to the Cleve. I heard it's really nice there.
30 Rock really pitched the hell out of the Cleve. And now it's sort of on my list.
Everyone's really nice there, I heard.
So, yeah, that's great. I'm glad they won an award. Things keep going, getting better and better for Shadow Dog. Every time I talk with him,
they've got... Which means it gets better and better for us.
I hope so. Better and better for our fans.
Yeah.
ShadowDogProductions.com. Whitney, what are we doing this week?
We are going to review Moonrise Kingdom and then list our top five most anticipated films for the rest of the year.
Stick around. Rebecca's our first writer-inner, and she says, when I heard Whitney say, Amy, bored, at the end of the last episode, I laughed out loud and thought, brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Just like The Walking Dead, you two close with some of the best material on the entire show.
And usually when we stop recording, we laugh really hard at our own jokes and think we're brilliant, too.
Yeah, it's a good way to waste an hour. Mm-hmm. Next up, Nick from French Toast Sunday.
Oh, is that all she said?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a really nice email.
She says, hey, Whitney and Scott, I really enjoyed the last episode, despite the half hour of listener feedback. Okay, I want to address that. Listener feedback got a little crazy last time, but I want to...
A little out of hand. We edit. It's crazy.
We got a little nuts. Yeah. So we're going back to editing down some of the emails. So if you wrote in and a chunk is missing, that's where it went.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the last episode, despite the half hour of listener feedback. I found it funny that I forgot to mention which song it was. It was the one about wearing headphones at jobs and such that made me want to take off my headphones. And it was even funnier when the song played at the end of the episode.
Oh, yeah, that's always our end song.
That's our outro.
Yeah.
I laughed hysterically, but still found the song annoying. But it's not my decision because it's your podcast and you can pick whatever music you want. Yeah, keep up the good work.
Do people hate that song? Or is it just him? He's the first person I've heard.
Here's what I'll say. When we first started playing it, we got tons of emails saying we love it.
Mm-hmm.
Those emails have died out. Are we not keeping with the times?
Maybe we need to change our songs up.
The rest are perfect.
Oh, okay.
Rest are absolutely perfect. Okay. But now I'm doubting J plus J plus J a little bit. We still do both wear headphones at our jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So relevant.
Okay, can we keep going?
My You Choose pick is The Exterminating Angel, a 1962 surrealist Spanish film. It's not only an intriguing film in the way it's shot, but a biting satire that I feel was way ahead of its time. And Whitney, I don't admit this much, but I love Star Wars episodes 1 through 3. Not as much as 4 through 6, but I love them enough to give them multiple viewings via the Star Wars Saga Blu-ray set. I even went out and saw Phantom Menace when they released it in 3D.
Oh, really? I wanted to go see it in 3D.
Why didn't you?
Aaron went with his cousins, or his nieces, and so I didn't really have anyone to go with. I could have gone with you, but I feel like I would have put you through hell.
That's hard.
Yeah, so I didn't want to go
the last four or five Tyler Perry movies.
Right.
So I don't think that's fair.
Right.
Kyle Lamont from Test Patterns writes...
Okay, he says, hey-o, FMD.
Hey-o!
Or did he mean like, hey-o, like that?
Hey-o!
I hate that. Oh, man, I hate that.
You hate The Ed McMahon hair.
I hope he doesn't listen to this, but there was this kid I knew in junior high who did that all the time.
I don't think he's listening.
No, he might. I'm not going to name any names, but he might. And he used to do that all the time, and it was so horrible.
Hey-o!
Oh my gosh. Stop.
Here's
okay,
Johnny.
He said, I was on the fence about watching Ted, and your commentary about Seth MacFarlane's debut film didn't exactly draw me in. It seemed like you guys were kind of ho-hum on the movie's conventional through line. I may still watch it through Netflix in the future. I agree that it seemed like a live-action version of Family Guy. People eat this crap up. I agree that MacFarlane is a smart guy, but he's just pandering to his slovenly audience at this point. The fart joke you mentioned made me cringe. And yes, Mark Wahlberg is hilarious in The Happening. Hey, tree, how's it going? I like your bark. It looks really great. So you're a tree? What's all that about? Okay, well, it was great. I'm doing a good Mark Wahlberg, right?
Yeah, that
well,
was
it was
good.
Great to meet you. Say hi to your mother for me, okay? Now I'm going to go talk to a mushroom. I laughed out loud about your memories of recording movies off TV. For many, many years, I never saw the beginning of Star Wars A New Hope because my mom started recording it after C-3PO and R2-D2 fled to Tatooine. I finally saw the opening crawl scene when I was 8, and it was like watching the movie for the first time. I had similar experiences with taping Batman, the animated series, and X-Files. Stay Frosty, Kyle Lamon. Sorry.
Lamon.
I got ahead of myself because I wanted to say about the X-Files, I never missed a minute of recording the X-Files. I would pummel my sister if she was watching something different. Like, I remember, like, choke slamming her once because she wanted to watch something else. And she knows it's Sunday at 8 o'clock.
Right. Didn't she mess up? Was she the one who messed up your Rushmore?
Yeah, she's a monster. She just got married yesterday. Congratulations. P.S. We should do an epic, frankly, my dear, test pattern super podcast later this year.
Yes.
Think about it.
I already thought about it. I'm down.
Nobody asked me.
You're not invited.
Okay.
Daniel from Test Patterns, that's another podcast, writes, FMD!
Yes?
Happy to have a new episode of FMD. Where you guys been? What's up with that? I have a side project going on that's coming out hopefully on August 8th. And it's been taking up all my free time. That is the only teaser you're going to get. But I think we've been averaging every other week.
Yeah, I just got bored a little.
You got a little bored and I got a little busy.
I got a little, like, lazy. It wasn't bored, it was, like, totally lazy.
I want to know if this happens to anybody else. Do you ever go through periods where the thought of going to a movie in a theater sounds miserable and you don't go? I remember in college I used to go see 2 movies a week, always. I saw more movies in theaters than ever. And now it is, if I can get to 1 every 2 weeks, that's crazy.
I'm in a theater phase right now. I keep wanting to go see movies.
As good movies start to come out again, I think it's after Sundance. After
Sundance kills me.
It kills me too.
Yeah. But I don't know. Also, like, you have one bad experience with an audience and you don't want to go back.
There's something about the Broadway theater, which plays the art films here in Salt Lake, that I just think of it as the biggest hassle. I know
it
has a parking garage. It's closer than the big megaplex that we always go to, but something about it just, like, gives me feelings of stress, so I never want to go. But anyway, I think we're going to be pretty regular with new episodes coming up.
Yeah,
a lot of good stuff we want to see. We did see, In Love with Rome, or
To Rome with Love.
To Rome with Love, the new Woody Allen. We were going to do an episode on that, and then we saw what we're watching today, which is Moonrise Kingdom. Anywho.
You're not good at keeping the listener feedback short.
I think, that had nothing to do with anything.
You were just
off topic. I think your last episode brought
rambling
out all of the wrestling fans, and that's why you had so much positive feedback about it. I still found the episode enjoyable, just not relatable. Maybe I'm in the minority and just need to start watching wrestling from 1987 to present day to understand it all. Absolutely.
Maybe.
Agreed with your review of Ted. It's funny, but I felt like it was just a long Family Guy episode. Whitney was spot on. Seth MacFarlane is great at repackaging the same characters and story and selling it as something new. Quite impressive. I think where Ted really fails is the overuse of showing every character's reaction to everything that was happening.
Mm.
It felt bloated and tried to inject too much story into a film that really didn't need it, and frankly did better when it embraced its outrageousness, i.e. Ted having sex and not explaining how that works, Flash Gordon, etc. Also, Joe McHale was criminally underused, didn't feel his character was a good villain at all, and that whole storyline fell flat. And Daniel sent in a top 5 movies that he loves, but no one else does.
Okay.
Number 5, Saw 2.
Really?
Yeah, that one.
Okay.
Number 4, Empire Records.
That is, everybody loves that movie, Daniel.
Everybody loves Empire
Records. Everybody I've ever met loves Empire Records.
Damn the man.
Our age, at least.
Yeah.
Damn the man, save the empire.
Number 3.
Who glued these quarters to the floor? I don't feel like I have to explain my art to you, Warren.
She loves that movie more than most. Number 3, Clue. Completely watchable, but completely campy. So ridiculous, yet I can probably quote a large portion of this movie and would easily watch again.
I love Clue. Everybody loves. They just did a retrospective of it.
I had 2 Pauly Shore movies on
sorry.
My list.
Yeah, you are just not cutting it here. What are the next ones?
Rocky IV.
Oh, Daniel! Everybody loves Rocky IV. Have you seen that snow montage?
Jesus. What's your prediction for the fight?
That's Rocky III, and it's pain.
That was the test, and you passed.
Thanks.
Number 1, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
You win. But secretly, I love that song so much. That is the most romantic.
Everything I do it for you.
That's the most romantic song ever. I remember when I was a little kid, I loved that song so much that when we went to go see some movie at the drive-in, I secretly watched Robin Hood Prince of Thieves like over the back of the car because it was playing. There was 2 screens at the drive-in and it was playing on the other screen, and I'm just like, that song is so romantic.
The first DVD that my family ever owned was Shrek. When my dad bought a DVD player, he bought Shrek. But the first DVD I ever spent my own money on was Robin Hood Prince of Thieves.
Really? I didn't know
yes,
that.
Yes, there was a time and place when I loved that movie. That time has passed. That movie. Mm-mm. Love the podcast. Love you 2 more. Love the mentions of test patterns. Just his podcast. And Scott, we will definitely find a way to get you on the show soon. We will figure out a hip-hop-oriented show and get you on, my friend.
Maybe you should have a wrestling-oriented show.
Maybe we should just do a lot of joint shows. And that's it for listener feedback. Daniel from Test Patterns is our You Choose winner. So, Daniel, you know the drill.
He chooses good
ones. Email us and let us know what you'd like us to watch. And next up, we're going to be reviewing the new Wes Anderson movie, Moonrise Kingdom. Stick around.
News on the mark!
That song means I'm a liar, because we actually have some movie news. There are 2 Hunger Games books left that haven't been turned into movies. Those 2 books will be made into 3 movies.
Okay, so is the second book going to be 1 and the third book going to be 2, like they've been doing with Harry Potter and Twilight
right.
and all that nonsense?
Right, and I also have...
I hate that.
Well, the hard...
Sorry, I whispered that because it was a swear word.
I thought you just really meant it.
No, I spent all day with my family yesterday. Like, some censoring myself now.
Catching...
Yeah, I hate that, but...
Well,
they
hard...
always make the most boring movies from the first half of the 2-parters, you know? Like, the Harry Potter... Twilight. But I've heard that the second part of the Twilight is going to be terrible.
Right.
And I don't know how they're going to do The Hobbit in 2 movies. Honestly, I have no idea.
It's going to be a lot of walking.
Catching
Fire, which is the second book, the release date for that will be November 22nd, 2013. So next Thanksgiving. And then Mockingjay, which is the third book, part 1 will be November 21st, 2014. And then part 2 will be November 20th, 2015. So every Thanksgiving for the next 3 years,
Do you know if they're filming them together? Because she's going to get old by then.
I have no idea. That is literally all I wrote down.
Oh.
No, it's fine. And the other thing I wanted to talk about, if we can move on from Hunger Games, because I really am not prepared.
Okay.
Just wrote down some dates.
Okay.
They're making a Little Nemo 2.
I heard about that. You mean Finding Nemo.
Yep. Certainly. It wasn't a big fish.
Little Finding Nemo. Yeah, I really disapprove of this.
It's the guy who went and made John Carter for Mars and totally blew it. He is now saying, yes, I'll direct whatever animated movie you want. Thank
He's
you for letting
back,
me back.
Because wasn't he...
He was a Pixar guy to start. He will... I wonder if he'll ever make another live-action film,
What I don't get about this, and I'm wondering if it's just sort of a little bit of a laziness, because Pixar can make whatever they want. and it's going to do
they have carte blanche.
Really, really well.
Yep.
So why? So it's not like they have to go back to the old favorites to make a bunch of money. They're going to make a bunch of money no matter what. So why do these sequels?
I couldn't agree more.
And I've heard rumors that they're doing a Toy Story 4.
Yeah, I think eventually they will.
Especially... I think that is, like, horrible. I read this blog post where, actually it was a Film Experience, Nathaniel from Film Experience, he was like, if they do that, they should take away the Oscars and the Oscar nominations and all this stuff, because the reason that it was nominated for all that stuff was because it was a really nice wrap-up to a series.
Right.
But if they're going to just, like, push it a little further and, like, strain more stories out of these characters, then he thinks that they should get them all back.
Yeah, that's a good point, because you have movies like Lord of the Rings not winning anything until the third one comes out, and,
yeah.
You know, and there's this sort of silent deal that everybody makes, and...
Right, if it's a trilogy, it's the third one.
What I don't get is Cars 2 was terrible and made the least amount of money for, like, almost any Pixar movie. I bet it made more than Bugs Life.
So maybe that's what led them to the Finding Nemo thing, though, because Finding Nemo is one of their most popular ones.
I guess, but it just... And you had Brave, which did underwhelming numbers for Pixar.
But it's going up.
Yeah, and it will do huge on DVD
and merchandise. It has a princess.
And it had its own production problems, like the director, I forgot what her name was.
Oh, her getting, like, kicked off of it.
She gets kicked off the film halfway through and gets replaced with somebody else.
Those Pixar boys were like, what? A woman?
Yeah, just kidding. Thanks for supporting as well. Enough to get this funded, and well, we're good. You have Cars 2. And then you have Brave, which was underwhelming. And now you're going to have Monsters University coming out.
Monsters, Inc. 2.
Monsters, Inc. 2. And then they've got Finding Nemo 2. Somewhere down the line, they're having a dinosaur movie called A Good Dinosaur.
I love dinosaurs.
Right. And hopefully that is amazing. If it's not amazing, I don't know what's going to happen to Pixar.
If it's not amazing, they'll still make a ton of money and they'll be fine.
But how many do they have before their reputation is tarnished enough where somebody could take their spot? Because, I mean, that's over, like, 3 years or 4 years, like, to get these next few movies out. I was reading an article about this, and they pointed out that the DreamWorks, who does Shrek, it's basically Pixar's biggest competitor.
Uh-huh.
They do tons. There were 4 Shrek movies.
Right.
But at the same time, they turn out 2 to 3 animated films a year.
Do you think that Pixar will start doing that with all these?
I don't know.
Or at least, like, just one. Does Pixar do one a year?
Pretty much.
Oh, they do?
For the most part, one
a year. They sort of took Disney's place for that. Remember when Disney did one a year?
Mm-hmm.
When it was, like, just especially, 2D animation?
Yeah.
I really miss that.
Because it was, like, the big event every year.
Yeah.
Because it was, like, Aladdin, Lion King, Mulan, like, Hunchback, Hercules.
Yeah.
And, like, all these ones came. And then now they're doing, like, they did Princess and the Frog, which still did huge numbers.
It was sort of a throwback.
But Disney's doing some smaller ones, like the Winnie the Pooh movie. And they're...
I loved the new Winnie the Pooh movie.
Right, but it did not do Pixar numbers. No. But I think that's their little one-off.
Yeah, but it didn't cost Pixar costs to produce either.
Exactly. So I think they've got a business model figured out. But if Pixar flops with their next 3 movies, I don't know what's going to happen. Because their next 3 movies will be for the next 3 years. And you'll have a whole new generation of kids.
Yeah.
And I also read another article today about, this was in the LA Times, about how millennials don't want or need older generations movies.
We're millennials, right?
No, younger than us are millennials.
Are we? What are we? We're on the edge, right?
We're a generation. The middle.
We're like Y.
Yeah, but millennials would be like your brother's age or younger.
Okay.
And so they were talking about the Spider-Man trilogy,
uh-huh.
And that when they interview and talk to do market research for millennials, kids who are in high school now. There's so much content is coming at them every day.
They didn't see the Tobey Maguire movie?
No, and they don't care to. It's old.
Yeah.
They compared film for these kids like fashion. Like, that's 10 years old. That's so out of date. Like, why would I wear that?
That's
and so make me a new one. And they
I'm
going
to talk to my classes about this now, since I'm teaching 18-year-olds for the most part.
Right.
I even have a couple 17-year-olds in there.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to talk to them. It's so interesting to find out what they are aware of. Like, half my class had never heard of Marilyn Manson. Because I show a clip from Bullying from Columbine, the clip where he's talking about, right. like, whether he was to blame or not. And half of them are like, who is that guy? Mm-hmm. like, this weirdo. And for us, in, like, junior high, he was the most controversial...
He was everywhere.
...character ever.
But that's the thing that kind of scares me, is because when I was growing up, I knew so much about older generation stuff. I grew up watching Andy Griffith, Gomer Pyle, Happy Days, just everything
before me. And they're not totally ignorant of that kind of stuff. Like, kids their age know Boy Meets World, for example.
Right.
They've watched episodes of Full House. Like,
some of them have.
Yeah, well, most of them, though. Uh-huh. Like, I would say at least, like, the 18-year-olds I'm teaching.
A lot of them know
Full House. Yeah, and they get weird references from my childhood still. So I don't think, like, I don't think that's entirely accurate to say that all of them...
No, but I think they're saying it's a shift.
Mm.
But I'm worried if that becomes the bigger shift where you don't need older stuff. That just sounds dangerous to me. That sounds, like, sad.
What do you mean, old man?
I feel like an old man, but I
Why
also...
Why is that sad?
Because I was raised in a generation that, like, not honored, but, like, we definitely looked to older stuff and watched it just right next to what we watched. We had Nick at Night, and we watched it constantly.
Maybe that's because we didn't have as much stuff as they have.
That's what I'm worried about. Is
Oh, yeah, that's what you just said.
That's exactly what I said. So if this next generation has so much new stuff for them, then they don't care about the older stuff. Then, although one thing in the article was saying, like, I showed my high school class The Godfather, and they were bored. And I was like, yeah, no shit.
You're like, you're bored.
They're 16, and you're trying to tell them about The Godfather.
Yeah, and
like,
The Godfather's kind of a boring movie, let's be honest. Like, I love it, but...
I love it, too,
it's slow,
but...
And if you don't keep up, then you're completely lost forever.
If I was 16 and you showed me The Godfather, I'd give me a 50-50 about caring a shit about that movie.
Yeah.
That's just being 16,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, that's not a sign of the millennial generation. They're always trying to pin that stuff on, like, the editing is faster now. Like, we were, like, the MTV generation, where, like, music
Everything
video
looks like
editing.
A music video.
Yeah, and so we can't, our attention isn't kept by, like, slow-moving shots.
Uh-huh.
It's so stupid. It's stupid. Like, kids still liked WALL-E.
Exactly,
and WALL-E
yeah.
is, like, slow-moving, like,
right.
silent film. So I think that that's sort of an ignorant thing to say. It's one of those things, like, in our generation... We appreciate our elders.
But it...
Watch Bewitched.
But at the same time, they are dealing with a whole new way to get media.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of media that's being produced is coming at a higher rate than ever before. And that's going to have an impact on the impact that old films have.
Yeah.
On this new generation.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying, like, the world's
ending.
I'm wondering
if the important old films, though, will still... They'll still be interested in them. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't hurt my feelings that they don't want to go back and watch the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man.
It's a good point.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
But you can go your whole life without seeing that movie, and you're not going to miss out on anything.
Yeah.
But of course there's, like, older films that I would want them to like.
Like Ninja Turtles 2.
Yeah.
All right, now we're going to review Moonrise Kingdom. Stick around.
Dear Suzy, here's my plan.
Dear Sam, my answer is yes.
Dear Suzy, 1.
Dear Sam, where?
Dear Suzy, walk 400 yards due north from your house to the dirt path which has not got any name on it. Turn right and follow to the end. I will meet you in the meadow.
Moonrise Kingdom is my favorite Wes Anderson movie.
You decided?
I did.
But when we left the theater, you said might be.
It is.
That's great.
Yeah.
I think it deserves it. Honestly,
it is fantastic.
I do. I'm so surprised at the negative reviews people have given it.
I have read zero reviews because I could give two shits.
People just get very, like, annoyed with Wes Anderson for doing the same thing. And I just realized, like, as I was saying that, the reason I paused was because I feel like this review is going to contradict everything I said in the TED review when I was mad at Seth Farland for doing the same format again, because Wes Anderson's doing the same format again, and I am totally in love with it.
But I know the difference is the depth in his characters. Like, his style looks the same.
Yeah.
But his characters are the same sort of types.
Same quirkiness.
They speak the same way. Uh-huh. You know, it's all very Wes Anderson, but, like, the depth of his characters, Ted couldn't touch it.
Right.
You know, and shouldn't have tried.
So you think it's okay that Wes Anderson's doing the same thing?
Stylistically, he's doing the same thing. But I think he's telling different types of stories.
Uh-huh.
Even though he's using what appear to be similar types of characters.
Uh-huh.
But he's never done... he's never had child characters like this before.
No.
He's never had young characters like
this
before.
He's had high school students.
Yeah, he had, like, Rushmore. There were those two little kids, Ben Stiller's kids from the Royal Tenenbaums, but...
And I'm going to argue, like, all of his characters are kind of children.
But this is different. These children aren't childish.
I know, that's what... I mean, it kind of makes it perfect, though, because, like, Royal Tenenbaum, or Ben Stiller in that movie, or any of the Tenenbaums, right, they all act like children. Like, he always has these children except for the mothers.
Right.
The mothers are always, like, these up on pedestals and whatever. They're always super intelligent, keeping everybody in line, but, like...
And they're always Angelica Houston.
But then, like, everybody else underneath, they behave like children, so it's interesting that when he does... Do you put children in his movies, they behave like quite a bit like adults, or children trying to be adults, and maybe that's what all of his characters are, like, mm-hmm. children trying to be adults, stuck in childhood, like, it's just a sort of out-of-whack timeline.
Yeah.
It's cool.
For those who haven't seen Moonrise Kingdom, it's set in Rhode Island in the 1960s.
Is that where it was?
Uh-huh. Oh. And it was shot in Rhode Island, too.
Oh.
Two young 12-year-old kids, a boy and a girl... become pen pals after meeting one night at a play, and they decide that they're going to run off together because they're the only ones who understand one another. And so they go off on this gigantic camping trip together. And the boy is a misunderstood khaki scout, which is basically a Boy Scout.
Uh-huh.
And the girl is a very, like, a highly intelligent... I don't know how to describe her. She's a really interesting character. She's precocious.
And she's got a temper.
Uh-huh. It's like some little, like, couple one-off jokes about that.
Yeah, she feels like she doesn't, like, fit in to mm-hmm. her family or school or anything like that. So they're sort of like a misfit match. But obviously, like, they're kids. The parents don't want them running away together. So the whole movie is their parents trying to keep them from running away together.
And failing.
Yeah.
So, the movie has a lot of the same people that show up in Wes Anderson films. Jason Schwartzman's in it.
For a minute.
He's in it, but he's good.
Oh, man, when he shows up on screen, you just get so happy.
Because it's not until the third act.
Uh-huh, and you're just like, there he is!
Bill Murray plays the little boy's, or the little girl's father.
Bill Murray at his most disheveled. Yes. Have you ever seen Bill Murray like that?
I would say the only time I see him more disheveled was in Broken Flowers.
Oh, yeah. That was sad, Bill Murray.
Right. You're happy he's disheveled.
No, he's a sad Bill Murray here, too. And Frances McDormand is, like, at her most frumpy and disheveled. Like, they play, like, her lawyer parents. Both of them are lawyers, and they're her parents, and they're still married, but they obviously have, like...
checked out.
They're over one another.
Frances McDormand is having an affair with the local police officer, who's played by Bruce Willis,
mm-hmm.
in his first Wes Anderson film.
Yeah, I read some interview where he was like, someone was like, what's it like to work with us, Wes Anderson, and him being like, awful, kind of Bruce Willis was just like, were you with any director? Like, I play it straight. He's like, I feel like some of the other people were hamming it up, but I was playing it straight. Like, oh, okay, Bruce Willis.
Yeah, and that was what I thought was interesting, is that he's cast after being known as somebody difficult to work with.
Yeah.
As well as Edward Norton, who hasn't made a big film since 2008, which was The Hulk, which made well more than it made almost twice its budget.
Yeah.
It made $263 million.
He's marketable. He's just, I've just heard nobody, that he's like, nobody wants to work with him.
He's done he's a handful of straight-to-DVD indie films.
What has he done that has made him such a jerk? Like, at least with, like, Christian Bale, you have the recordings of him being a jerk, so you're like, oh, that's the way. He's like a movie star. What does Edward Norton do?
I don't know. I guess he just, all I've heard is that he likes to change the script. Like, he gets an idea in his head, and he's like, oh, we're not doing that anymore.
That wouldn't work for Wes Anderson.
No.
He is so meticulous, like, every word. Yeah. I feel like probably every word that's on the page gets spoken in the movie. And I've seen his scripts.
And they're and, like, close.
Every, like, little set design piece is described.
Yeah.
So
when I read the script for Royal Tenenbaums, yeah. I was like, wait, did somebody just watch the movie and just transcribe it?
Right.
But then there were, like, little differences throughout where I was like, no, they just shot this script.
Yeah.
And that's the power he has, and that's sort of, like, the mastery he has. This film, he co-wrote it with Roman Coppola.
He always co-writes them.
Has he done it with Roman Coppola before?
I don't know. He's done it with Noah Baumbach, and he's done it, or Baumbach, and he's done it with Owen Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know who he did Darjeeling Limited with.
Maybe it was Roman Coppola, but I loved this script. There were a few missteps that I bet on a second viewing I'll love.
Like what?
When he gets shot, when he gets hit by lightning, and it's just ignored.
That was strange. That was what I liked about it compared to Wes Anderson's other movies, is that it was, like, way more whimsical.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of stuff happened that can't happen in real life. Or, like, and obviously, like, pirates taking over your ship can't happen in real life, but it's, like, it's almost like a fantasy.
It's sort of played by some different rules.
Yeah, it played by the same rules. The girl in it is obsessed with these fantasy novels, these, like, children's books, where girls, she's like, I prefer female main characters that have, like, special powers or whatever. And that's sort of, like, I think what the movie was playing off of. Mm-hmm. Like, it had, because it was sort of this hero's journey with the two kids that are in love, and then it has, like, these, like, parts that, you know, that can't happen.
Yeah.
He gets hit by lightning, he's fine.
And he's fine in, like, the next scene. She doesn't kill the dog. They're being chased down by the khaki scouts, and one of them shoots an arrow at them. It's all off screen, but then you cut back and the dog has been shot through the neck.
Arrow in the neck.
Here's what I'll say, though. Whitney's reaction to this scene was the best, because the dog gets hit by the arrow, and she goes, oh no! And then it immediately cuts to a shot of a child, a mean khaki scout, who's just been stabbed in, like, the kidney with a pair of lefty scissors. And she's like, yeah! She went from so sad dog got hurt to so happy a baby, like, a child got hurt.
Oh, that was not it. I thought the dog thing was funny. I was laughing about the dog thing.
You were not laughing about the dog thing.
Yes, I was! I know what I was laughing at.
I don't buy it.
I do.
I don't buy it.
That's annoying.
You turned and looked at me, and were so sad about the dog, and then
the child was stabbed.
It's
funny, though, that he shot a dog through the neck. Like, the cutest little dog.
Right.
And they set him up to be a cute little dog for the whole movie, and then immediately shot through the neck. Yeah, and that's funny.
I love the look of this film. It was shot on 16mm, and it looks...
very 60s French.
Yeah. Exactly. It looks like an Arcade Fire music video.
It looks like a Francois Hardy record cover.
It's
which she has in the movie.
And it's the kind of look and kind of music that I've, like, really been getting into lately. Like, anything from the 60s with lots of flutes I've been listening to. I've been on this, like, 60s, 70s, really soft flute.
You know what else reminded me of the 60s in France was, like, how sort of open they were with the kids' sexuality.
That is something... Now, you've read some reviews. Have you heard that mentioned at all?
No, all I've read is that, you know, people mad about same old, same old.
Which, I don't even feel is the case here.
We already discussed
here.
That.
Yeah.
But anyway, what are you going to say about...
The sexuality, yeah. There is a scene in the film where they're on the beach together, and they decide that they're going to kiss. And so then they kiss. And it's really sweet. And then she's like, do you know how to French kiss? And he's like, I think so. And she's like, put your tongue in my mouth. And they do that.
No, it's way cuter than
it's
that. That's
cute.
Gross. It's like, let's touch tongues.
Right.
Not put your tongue in my mouth.
Right. Okay. Well, anyway. Oh, and they're standing there in, like, swimsuits.
No, underpants.
But they're at the beach, like it's...
Yeah, they're at the beach, but it's their underpants.
Okay, it's underpants. Why don't you tell us, since you memorized every frame of this?
I just say you're doing a bad job. You're getting some parts creepier and some parts not as creepy.
Well, that's what I want to talk about.
Okay, so they're in their underpants and they're French kissing, and then she's like, says something about him having an erection.
Well, no, first she makes him feel her boobs.
No, erection first, then boobs.
Really?
Yep. She was like, it's hard, I can feel it. And he's like, sorry. And she's like, it's okay. And then she's like, you can feel my chest. And then she says, I think they're going to grow.
Yeah. So all I had to say about the scene was I was surprised at it because they're 12-year-olds, actors, and everything's on screen.
Yeah.
And then secondly, I was like, I can't believe Wes Anderson like had the balls to shoot that scene. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, the scene is really sweet.
It's really
and it
good.
Plays with the film, and it's one of the best scenes in the film.
And it works with that French, like, vibe, yeah.
But if that scene had gone wrong, like, if the public perception of that scene was just generally, that was a misstep, that's a huge misstep. That right. is, like, I wonder how much time was spent editing that.
And yeah. Like, I mean, their parents were probably just right there.
Still, but that aside, I mean, no one's saying that he took advantage of these children.
Yeah.
But I think, like, if it had come off like, why would you put that in the movie? Like, that didn't even help the movie. Why do you have, like, 12-year-olds, like, touching
why
each other's
do you think
boobs?
This is a good thing to yeah. film? Yeah.
Yeah, like, because I don't think anybody's going to have a huge problem with it. It totally works for the film, and it's a sweet scene. But if something had gone wrong in editing or... You know, like, the public could,
right.
like, go crazy over something.
Right. If something that gets out.
So he, like, took a risk, and it really worked for the film.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't have had the guts to do it. I couldn't
That's
have...
That's why you're not Wes Anderson.
There's a lot of reasons I'm not Wes Anderson.
I like him.
I do, too.
He's such a... Like, he draws in such a hipster, annoying crowd of people. But I like him.
I also I feel, though, that he... Because of things like Fantastic Mr. Fox... He's, like, starting to bring in a bigger audience. Like, he's sort of almost a household name now.
As demonstrated by our wacky audience that we saw it with.
This, okay.
So weird.
This is, we almost did two separate reviews. A first, a review of Moonrise Kingdom, and second, a review of the crowd that we went to see Moonrise Kingdom with, which ties into what we were talking about during movie news, not wanting to go to theaters. It's because of people like this.
So, yeah, I mean, we go in, it's a Saturday, or it's a Sunday afternoon, and the room is full of the elderly. I don't know why. I mean, there were, like, old people, in their 90s old people, like, barely walking old people, and then there were weird groups, like, of, like, middle-aged women on a lunch date together, and, like...
The type of ones that go, like, ladies!
Yeah, and, when you have to be, and like when they see each other, like kiss on the mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With way too much purple lipstick.
Yeah.
First of all, we had to deal with these people like just trying to buy tickets. Like we're running late. And
I never guessed they were going to go into our movie though.
No.
Yeah, they were standing in line, but they didn't realize they were in line.
We're
and they were just waiting for their
them.
Gal pals to
they're
show up.
They're just this like annoying gaggle, right. And they're. So annoying.
They
were
a total gaggle.
They were a gaggle.
And every time someone new showed up, they kissed on the mouth, and they had those wrinkly lipstick lips.
Well, they also, who I felt bad for was like the 15-year-old girl who was like one of their daughters who had to come with them.
Oh, really? I didn't see her.
Oh, yeah. She was like 15. Oh. She got a good kiss. She got from the purplest lipstick. I mean, it was, I just was watching her like, I am so sorry.
And we were in this theater where once we got in the theater, there was only one aisle on this theater. So you could only go in from one side, but every single person... Half the theater came in late.
Right.
So it was dark, and every single person tried to go over to the other side of the theater to cross up to the top, but ran into a wall. And then loudly, like, with no thought to everyone else, was just like, what? I can't get up this way?
Uh-huh.
Why can't I get up? This is weird.
Where should we sit? Oh, my God.
And then
there's this group of...
So many comments. comments, like, every preview of the, like, the oldest people were sitting right behind us. Every single preview, they would, like, comment on whether, on the rating. So, like, I think that might be why they were there, which, it's a Sunday, so it doesn't make any sense to me, but I think they were there because this is a PG-13 movie.
Well, that's the thing I don't understand, is because if they're worried about ratings, the only people I really know about ratings are people with kids,
mm-hmm.
young kids, and Mormons.
And Mormons.
But they were on a movie on a Sunday, and they're too old to have little kids. Why do you care if the movie's PG-13?
I don't know, but every single preview, they'd be like, oh, R.
Like, oh, it's PG-13.
Oh, PG-13, I'll see that. So that might have been why they were at this one. But then one of them was deaf. And so
and mostly deaf, but a little blind.
He kept on asking the lady next to him what the characters had just said, and he was the oldest one among them.
And I don't have a problem with that, because he was too...
But can't you keep it a little quieter?
He was shouting it.
What did he say?
What? Like, he was, like, offended.
She said, I'll see you tomorrow!
That was the thing. He reacted like he had just heard something that, like, raped his ears. Like, he was just, like, couldn't believe what he had heard, but really he hadn't heard anything. He's just like, what did she say? And you're like, oh, what did she say? Like, what did I miss? And she's like, I'll see you tomorrow! And I'm like, that didn't mean anything. Why are you mad about that?
And then everything that was written on screen...
Oh, what does that say?
Moonrise Kingdom.
And the lady next to him, like, which I think was his wife, she was, like, trying to, like, help him through this. And, like, I'll be old at the movie theater someday. Like,
I'm
not...
You're trying to be sympathetic.
I am sympathetic. Like, he was not my least favorite person in that crowd at all.
Oh, I'll tell you about my least favorite in a second.
Okay, but his wife, what I loved about her is you could tell she had problems following what was going on with the movie. Because at one point, she asked, like, he was like, what? Why did she say it? And then she told him, like... Oh, I'd explain it, but it doesn't make any sense. And I was like, do I have to turn around and explain it to you? But they seemed to like it. Afterwards, they were saying they liked it.
They were.
Yeah.
So the guy behind me was like, that was weird.
Oh, that guy sucks.
Okay, so he's the worst one, right? He was old, wasn't he?
No, he was probably in his 60s.
Okay.
Not trouble getting up the stairs old.
At some point, he decided that this was going to be a heckle fest. Like, it was weird because he wasn't loud before the movie started. He wasn't loud for the first couple previews. But then suddenly he decided he was going to make lots of really loud jokes so the whole audience could hear him. Like, he thought he was being a real jokester.
Which, until you said it right now, I didn't realize he was making jokes.
Yeah, he was trying to make jokes. So, like,
I just heard him reading shit for no
reason.
So
when, like, the Dolby Digital sound, it did the one that was, like, all around us or whatever, and you can hear it coming from all around you. He was like, oh, where did that come from?
That's what he meant. I did no clue, again, no clue what he was talking about.
And
I thought somebody, like, hit him with something.
So he's made, like, three or four jokes.
Oh, God. I had no idea those were jokes.
Focus Features comes up, and he starts sounding out the word focus, because it's, like, I guess because it's out of focus, so he was making a joke. I don't know. But he was like, folk, and I just go, oh, my God. Then he never...
Within earshot. Whitney shut him down before the movie started. Folk! Because I didn't know what he was saying. Again, this guy was, like, not making any sense to me. And I'm like, what time does Spider-Man start? I'm sneaking into that theater. I gotta get out of here. I don't want to murder these
And the
people.
Ladies were, like, trying to go past us. Their big butts.
Tons of open seats, but they gotta sit, like, right next to us. Like, excuse us.
Oh, excuse us. We're ladies. We're out.
And they gaggled right past us. They were just... I don't know, because when I went to go see, and Daniel and I have talked about this, like, when I went to go see Think Like a Man,
yeah,
that audience was awesome.
Appropriate.
She on drugs.
Yeah, that's appropriate.
Hilarious, sir. Like, you saw a moment, you seized it, you knocked it out of the park.
But you see Moonrise Kingdom.
Shut your mouth.
You should be quiet.
Shut your mouth. Kevin Hart is not in this movie. Shut it.
It has to be the PG-13 to me. What about it? Or maybe it was Bruce Willis.
No, I think it was a movie set in the 60s in New England. Like, That's the best movie for them at that theater.
Wouldn't they see the preview and just be like, no?
No, I think they see the preview and they hear music from the 60s and it's shot in shitty 16mm like they used to watch. And they're like, oh, that seems nice. And again, they liked it. By the time the movie ended, like, besides Focus, the jokester, I didn't even know.
I was so mad at him. Like, I just felt this, like, just so
you
much...
You shut him down, I was really proud
so
of you.
So much hatred for him.
Like, I felt like we were getting mugged and you were the one who defended us. Like, I hid behind a trash can while you just, like, slapped the shit out of a robber. It was like, stick him up. And you're just like, no. And you just, like, swipe your arm like a bear and just, like... Because he didn't speak after that. I didn't hear him tell the credits.
No, he didn't.
So, that was pretty awesome.
I feel like I must have had some influence, right?
Cook, and I didn't know what he was saying, and you were like, oh my god, and just like a hush over the whole theater, and I started laughing, and like,
so did I.
I don't know.
I just like, because sometimes I feel like there's so much hatred inside me for everyone, but I rarely like let it out. I feel like I'm quite passive aggressive.
Well, I don't know.
No, I let it out.
I wouldn't say that you hold it all in.
Oh, I feel like I bottle a little.
I feel you probably have a lot more anger than I know about.
Yes, that's what it is. That's what it is.
No one would ever guess that you're bottling your anger.
But then every once in a while when I kind of explode like that a little bit in front of strangers, that's sort of like an explosion. And it comes as a surprise to myself.
At least
and
you
that's
didn't.
Why I start laughing.
Yeah. It was good. It was satisfying. But... that was our review of Moonrise Kingdom, and then slash the audience at Moonrise Kingdom. Again, Moonrise Kingdom, you gotta go see it. See it on the big screen. It's my favorite Wes Anderson movie. And there's not a Wes Anderson movie I don't like.
Right.
You know, I love Wes Anderson movies. But this one, I feel, is his best.
When I'm, like, ranking Wes Anderson movies from what I like best to what I like least, even the ones that I like least... It's one of my favorite movies.
I agree.
So, I just think that guy is, like, just uber talented. And he has a way of finding people's, like, soft spots and, like, sincerity and people you didn't know had sincerity. Like, Edward Norton is heartbreaking in that movie. He's so good.
If this doesn't relaunch his career, I don't know what will. Because he, like, gives the performance
the
of a lifetime.
Movie?
Oh, yeah. He's got a bit... He doesn't even
or
make the poster.
Or his blowjob in The Dictator.
No.
Yeah, he...
What?
There's a blowjob joke with Edward Norton in The Dictator.
Is he in it?
Yeah, for a second.
Edward Norton makes a cameo in The Dictator?
Yeah, but so does... Oh, who does? Oh, Megan Fox, isn't it?
Good Lord.
There's a few people in it.
We should have done a review on that.
Oh, that was the worst movie, no. Okay. Oh, so horrible.
Do you want to talk about The Dictator a
little? No, I'm going to throw up. It was the worst.
I'm so glad I didn't see it.
It was just all poop jokes, like, he...
And you only paid $1 to see it.
He is scraping the bottom of the barrel of his material and coming up empty.
Yeah. But maybe he'll play Freddie Mercury someday.
As long as he doesn't direct it, I'm okay with that.
All right, next up we're going to list our top 5 most anticipated films for the rest of the year. Stick around.
5 most anticipated movie for the rest of the year is Looper, which I know it comes out in like a couple weeks, so it's I don't have to anticipate too much, but I'm really excited for this. I love Brick. I think Brick is really smart, and smarter than even people who love it give it credit for. It's just a really smart throwback to my favorite movies from the 30s. So, like, I love that movie, and the same director is doing this, Rian Johnson. And it's got Jogo again, who's good.
And
it's
Bruce
got
Willis.
Bruce Willis, who I love. I feel like I didn't let on too much in our Moonrise Kingdom review. Bruce Willis is awesome. Like,
yeah, you love Bruce Willis.
I love Bruce Willis. And then it also has, I found out today, Emily Blunt and Paul Dano. So, like, it's a great cast, and it's about time travel, so I won't be seeing it with Aaron or Luke and our stupid friends who like time travel too much. And looks good. So that's my number five.
My number five, oh, before I get into it, there were a couple that I left off the list, like The Dark Knight Rises.
Oh, me too. I left off some big ones.
And I also left off Beasts of the Southern Wild.
I left off Django.
Because I left Django off, too, because I figured everybody's looking forward to that. I was trying to do, like, maybe some smaller movies people haven't heard of yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I left off Beasts of the Southern Wild, which was, like, the It movie from Sundance that I didn't get in to see. No one did.
No one did.
I left it off because I am trying to go into that movie, which comes out soon, I've heard, knowing as little about it as possible.
So you didn't want to look anything up.
Right. So that one is probably should be my number one. It's what I'm looking forward to the most.
Uh-huh.
But I hardly know anything about it.
Yeah, I'm on the same page as you.
Okay. So my number five is The Man with Iron Fists, which is a kung fu movie directed by RZA from the Wu-Tang Clan. I saw the trailer for it before Moonrise Kingdom, wasn't it?
No.
When did we see the trailer for it?
On our computer.
We just watched that one on our own? Mm-hmm. Okay. It was co-written by RZA and Eli Roth, who was known for, like, Hostel and, like, a bunch of stuff with Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah, he's awesome, actually. I kind of like him.
Yeah. And so they're...
Actually, he's stupid, but I kind of like his movies. When he talks, agreed. I'm like, you are a stupid man, aren't you?
What I'm excited for is when his torture porn movies, there was something I couldn't watch them while they were popular and in theaters.
Uh-huh.
But I think, like, in 10 years, when, like, maybe they're a little tamer compared to other things I've seen,
well,
I can go back and
Cabin
watch.
Cabin Fever and liked it. Remember the one
totally, with Ryder
Sean
Strong?
Hunter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I've avoided the Hostel movies.
Mm-hmm.
But there will be a day where I watch those.
Oh, yeah, me too.
But they, Man with Iron Fist, Lucy Liu's in it, and she's a total babe, and she's totally rad. Batista from the WWE is in it, and he plays a guy who can sort of turn to metal, sort of looks like a golden colossus. And it's just, the trailer had, like, amazing Wu-Tang music in it. The action looked fantastic. The weapons looked awesome. I've been following the production for this one, and that's my number five.
All right, my number four is Cosmopolis. This is
the
new David Cronenberg movie.
I don't see the love for this.
Because I liked Existenz, and I like his movies.
You love Cronenberg.
Yeah, I love Cronenberg. Even really bad Cronenberg movies, I like them, because I feel like they are philosophically interesting. Like, even when they're horribly acted and they're weird premise, like some lady growing wombs on the outside of her body, there's still always really interesting stuff going on. The only one, it turns out, I didn't really like was last year's.
A Dangerous Method.
A Dangerous Method. Was
That was the one with Viggo Mortensen.
It was just such a clear-cut bio, or like historical fiction. Like, it just was not interesting to me, and because the psychoanalysis was so overt, I thought it was, like, a little bit tacky.
Yeah, and you were saying, like, oh, well, he finally got around to making a movie about Freud after making 30 movies about Freud.
Right.
Like,
yeah, so, just... but this one looks interesting again. It looks like it's a sci-fi one again, which he does sometimes, and it's got Robert Pattinson doing something different.
From Twilight?
Yeah, but he's doing something different, and I am interested in that. He looks really stupid doing it, but we'll see. And then it's got Juliette Binoche, Jay Baruchel, who was in, like, Undeclared
right.
and Almost Famous and stuff, Samantha Morton and Paul Giamatti. So it's, again, it's, like, a really great cast.
I was excited for it because, again, I love Cronenberg, and I was excited to see what he was going to do with Robert Pattinson. But then I saw the trailer and was completely underwhelmed and confused. Seems like 3/4 of this movie takes place in the back of a limo.
It is. It's a guy, it's a rich, a 28-year-old billionaire on a way to get a haircut in his limo. That's the, like...
I'll see it. I'll see it, but it's not something I'm anticipating.
I think it looks cool.
My number four is Premium Rush.
Now this, like, you're criticizing me for my Cronenberg pick. This looks like the stupidest movie.
Here's the cast. It's got Jogo, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and Michael Shannon. And it's a thriller about a bike messenger played by Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who one of the packages he delivers, everybody wants it. He doesn't know what it is. It's a total MacGuffin, but Michael Shannon playing a bad guy in a thriller.
Okay,
I just can't wait to see this movie.
And then we saw the trailer, and as a bike messenger, he's like a superhero.
It's sort of, it comes off a little too fast, too furious.
He's doing, like, wheelies. Yes, it's Too Fast, Too Furious on bicycles. Like, it just seems like it's some hipster being like, we need to get people excited about bicycles. Let's make this movie.
I wish it took place in Portland.
And that's how he sounds. We need to get the hipsters excited about the bicycles. I hate him so much. Do you know who directed it?
I don't. Not off the top of my head, but he's my new favorite director. Yeah, Premium Rush.
Alright, my number three is VHS.
Oh, man, that would have made my list if I had thought about it.
So we tried to get into this at Sundance, and we got stuck in a snowstorm and couldn't make it back to Salt Lake in time for the screening. It's a found footage horror movie directed by, like, five different directors, and it's short films. So all of them are found footage, but they're short films, which I love those sort of horror compilations.
The anthologies.
Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to it. And apparently you said it came out in, like, September on DirecTV.
I think...
Or on demand, I mean.
Yeah, on demand, either end of August or beginning of September.
I'll be buying it, like, on demand. Yeah. I really want to see it as soon as I can. That's my number three.
The guy who was directing Premium Rush, his name is David Cope, and he also directed Stir of Echoes.
I'm right. You're wrong.
Stir of Echoes was awesome.
No, it wasn't.
It totally was.
Does he have an ironic mustache or suspenders?
No, he looks adorable.
Oh, he's so cute.
Yeah. He also directed, he's a big writer. Like, he wrote Mission Impossible.
Really?
Yeah.
The first one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. That's right.
And he also wrote the screenplay to Jurassic Park. In your face!
That's an adaptation.
So Panic Room, Spider-Man, Stir of Echoes. What else we got?
Okay, he's cool, but Premium Rush still looks really stupid to me.
I think you're judging it too fast.
I just do not like those turnaround wheelies and then, like, how he slid under that bridge with his fancy shoes.
I guess here's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah.
Is that those are all those scenes in that movie put into the trailer.
Those? Oh, okay. To make it look too exciting.
That's what I'm hoping, but we'll see.
I hope there's, like, a few scenes of him, like, clipping people trying to cross the street, or, like, pedestrians would be like, out of the way, bike! Bikers are real jerks.
My number three is Killing Them Softly, and we talked about this movie on a movie news a long time ago. I was really excited. It's a adaptation of Coogan's... Oh, damn it. I don't remember what the... Coogan's Rush, I think. It's this novel by George V. Higgins. And it's being directed by Andrew Dominik, who did The Assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford. And this movie stars Brad Pitt playing Jackie Coogan. And it's also, this cast is fantastic. It's got James Gandolfini.
Yay!
Ray Liotta. I love him. Richard Jenkins.
Wait, did you say Ray Liotta?
Uh-huh. Oh. Slane is in it, that rapper who's in La Coca Nostra.
You know, P and Ray Liotta are like sidekicks.
Me too.
They're good buddies.
But I know what you're saying. Like, Scott, Slane isn't, why would I want to see that guy? Who is he? He was in both of the Ben Affleck movies that Ben Affleck directed, the Gone Baby Gone and The Town, which are some of my favorite movies. So they're all getting together in this movie, and it's basically about, I'll read it to you. Jackie Coogan is a professional enforcer who investigates a heist that went down during a mob-protected poker game. I think it's going to be awesome. Yeah. I've been waiting for a follow-up to Jesse James for years now.
I don't know how it did, but... Because Cannes over, right? Yeah.
So.
Alright, my number two is The Great Gatsby, the Baz Luhrmann movie that comes out on Christmas. It's been a long time, and I've been looking forward to this forever. Ever since I found out he was doing it, I got excited. It's Leonardo DiCaprio as Gatsby, Tobey Maguire, as Caraway, so they're, like, playing besties, which they are.
In real life.
I love it when they do that. Carrie Mulligan is Daisy, which seems perfect to me, and Joel Edgerton as Tom seems perfect to me. Like, all of the casting seems really spot on, and then I think he's going to do that same thing he did with Romeo and Juliet, where he sort of, like, modernizes it up and makes it, like, cool and flashy and fancy, which will be a really nice... it'll be really nice to see that against the Robert Redford, Mia Farrow, Great Gatsby, which most people consider a failure, but I think is actually okay. I think, like, that and how muted and sort of slow-paced it compared to this, like, flashy Great Gatsby will be interesting, because I think the book is actually somewhere in between.
Oh, okay.
And I love that book. That's, I mean, I'm American Studies major, and that's sort of my favorite book, and that's right. Sort of cliche, but I love that book.
So the director did, like you said, Romeo and Juliet, mm-hmm. did Moulin Rouge, Strictly Ballroom,
yeah.
Australia.
Uh-huh.
Is that it? Was that,
yeah, those I guess so. Four?
Man, there might have been a fifth. But he's, like, known for being, like, really big and stylized, which I think for Great Gatsby, like, will work.
Yeah, have you seen the preview?
It's yeah.
like, when they're showing the party scenes, they're actually, like, these huge parties. They're not just these fancy dinner parties. They're, like...
They're parties.
Big can-can dancers and gold and champagne and sparkles and all that.
My number two is a movie called Argo. And I just mentioned The Town and Gone Baby Gone. This is Ben Affleck's third directorial project,
mm-hmm.
and I couldn't be more excited for it. It's about a CIA specialist who's got to get six people out of Iran.
So Iran hostage crisis,
right.
yeah.
During the Olympics, I think.
Right? I don't remember now.
Anyway.
It will look really stupid, but I saw the trailer, and we watched, like, eight trailers. I don't remember which hostages it was.
Well, anyway, this and it's a period piece, so Ben Affleck's got really funky hair. And they
and
just,
a stupid beard. That beard looked bad.
I think he looks good, but it's a little on the nose. But they decide to get them out by having a fake sci-fi movie being shot there. And so they go in as a movie crew and use that to, like, get these people out. Bryan Cranston from Breaking Bad is in it. Ben Affleck, John Goodman. Like, it's Clay Duvall's in it.
I'm excited for it. But the reason it's not on my list is I'm a little skeptical of Ben Affleck directing himself. Because I loved The Town and Gone Baby Gone. And I think part of that is because he's not in it. And that's really sad. But I think, he's not in them, right?
I think you're wrong about that.
Is he a main character in them?
Yeah, like the main character.
What? Is he in, oh, he's in The Town.
Yeah.
Oh, never mind then. He was great.
Yeah.
I don't know. There was something about the trailer that I was like, he looks stupid. I don't know.
The costume took a little bit, especially since everybody else got to dress sort of normal for the time period.
And it looks like it's going to be sort of a comedy.
The trailer was cut pretty light.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know how that's going to work,
mm-hmm.
because the plot doesn't really call for that. There's a movie, oh my god, there's a movie called The Last Shot with Matthew Broderick and Alec Baldwin, straight to DVD, but it's about, like, a fake movie production, and it was based on a true story. Awful.
You saw it?
I own it. And
oh, Scott.
But when I saw this trailer, I was like, oh, I've seen that done. Where did I see that done? Oh, God, I hope that's not a rehash. And then they were like, and Alan Arkin's in it. And I was like, here we go. Saddle up.
Is that all?
That's all.
I just started reading, so okay.
That's all.
My number...
I'm just fact-checking.
Okay,
just fact-checking. I gotta be on top of things. If you're gonna just start spouting off things, you don't know what you're talking about.
Ben Affleck, what?
Directing himself.
What's he been in?
That never happens, and it never should.
Anyway, my number one is The Master. If you haven't seen the trailers for it, go see the trailers, because they, like, kind of blew me away. Actually, if the first trailer, the one with just Joaquin Phoenix, if that was a short film, I would say it was the best movie of the year.
I would agree with that.
I think this is Joaquin Phoenix's comeback after he sort of went a little nuts after Walk the Line.
I was not offended by that. like other people were. Like, I get it. You tried to do something. You got a little nutty, then you tried to play it off like you were doing it for a movie, and then you sucked Casey Affleck in with you, which was probably the biggest offense of the whole thing. But people were just like, I can't believe he tried to trick me. And I'm like, look, it's a fucking Joaquin Phoenix.
I have a totally different perspective on it. I think that he got really, really, really cocky after Walk the Line, and he decided that people cared what he did. And everyone knew it was a fake. He was on David Letterman, and everyone's like, oh, he's doing some sort of fake. And then you find out they're doing a movie, and you're like, oh, that's why he's doing the fake. I don't know anyone that was upset about it, because they were just like,
there were so many cares. There were so many bloggers that were just like, oh, really? What does he think he's doing? We know it's fake. Just say it's fake and call it a wash. And then he's going to write it through.
It's like, people were mad at him because he was being arrogant about it, not because he was trying to trick them.
Right. I think it was they were mad, because he thought that they could trick him with this, like, ridiculous wannabe Andy Kaufman persona.
Or that even if he did trick them, that people would care. And that's sort of why I don't like Andy Kaufman anymore, either. And that's probably just my generation, and I'm probably going to, like, offend so many people. Uh-huh. But I look at Andy Kaufman, and I'm like, yeah, he's playing characters. Who cares?
Uh-huh.
And so if he really did fake his death and he came back now, it'd be a really rude awakening when everybody is just like, so what? You're dead, you're alive, we don't care. You know, like, and I feel like Joaquin Phoenix was trying to pull something like that when nobody cares what he does. I don't care. Honestly, I don't care. If Joaquin Phoenix died tomorrow, I would be like, oh, that's sad for his family. I don't care.
I think the thing with me is, like, I love Andy Kaufman because of his, like, commitment to it. Like, he was doing it for so long, and people were legitimately tricked. Like, the Tony Clifton stuff, I think, is genius. And the wrestling with Jerry Lawler, like, and the slap on David Letterman. Like, I think that's brilliant.
Uh-huh.
But it had been done recently enough where, like, someone like Joaquin Phoenix, who you were like, see, Andy Kaufman was weird from the beginning. You were like, this guy's crazy. Like, he does stuff, and, like,
this guy is.
Right, but, like, I know who you are, Joaquin. Okay, I know your family.
A bunch of vegans.
Andy Kaufman didn't decide to, like, do some prank after he won an Oscar.
Right.
Like, he didn't win Best Actor, then was like, guess what, I'm nutty. And
right.
Like, no, it was ridiculous.
Do you see why it's sort of the same? If Andy Kaufman, after all of his prestige, were to come back and do it again, like if he were to show up again after he's been dead for 30 years or whatever, do you see how it'd be a little bit the same where you'd just be like, great?
I think he would have to know that he's not Tupac or Biggie. If Tupac or Biggie came back,
people would
shit. But if Andy Kaufman came back, he should have done it 10 years ago, or maybe like 15 years ago. I feel that, like, the time has passed.
Right.
I think, like, our parents might... Well, neither of our parents. None of our parents. But people our parents
maybe
know.
Maybe my parents' parents.
No, I feel that they are... I don't know what generation cared about Andy Kaufman.
I feel like it was a couple nerds. There were, like, four nerds watching him on TV being like, that guy's great.
I bet you... Here's who it is. It's the real-life versions of Bill, Sam, and Neil from Freaks and Geeks. Yeah. They'd be, like, taking their kids to school and, like, freak out when they heard it on the radio, and they'd, like, call each other. They'd, like, tweet the shit out of it.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm not done.
Oh.
I didn't even get to talk about my movie.
I feel we've been talking about it for 20 minutes.
It's The Master. It's really good. Philip Seymour Hoffman and Laura Dern are also in it. It's about a cult. Go ahead.
My number one is Wreck-It Ralph, which...
Sounds like my... video game movie.
Yeah.
The end.
No.
Your podcast.
Absolutely
not.
It's
so hot in here.
Oh, we get to my number one and you're just going to shit on it. You're going to pull your pants down and you're just going to shit on it.
My skin
is
sticking to the chair.
You can leave and I'll just talk about Wreck-It Ralph.
No, I need to make sure you don't ramble for too long.
Oh, thank God. You're the guardian.
I'm just kidding. I ramble
almost,
too.
You almost said I'm sorry and you stopped. You're like, that was like the equivalent of like, high five, too slow.
I've said I'm sorry before. I'm sorry all the time.
Can I talk about Wreck-It Ralph, this delightful children's movie?
Go ahead.
So it's a video game movie, and it's about a bad guy video game character in sort of an old 8-bit games, or like a Donkey Kong, who decides he doesn't want to be a bad guy anymore. And so he breaks out and starts, like, running into other video games. And from the trailer that came out, it looks fantastic. I was rolling over it. There's a scene where he goes to, like, a bad guy support group course. And, like, you have all of these bad guys from real video games. Like, you have him sitting there with, like...
How did they secure the rights for that?
That's what I don't know. I mean, I would hope that they would, for especially the ones from those older games, they would say, like, come on, you, that promotion is good for you. Like, people don't know what your games are as much anymore. Like, just come to Wreck-It Ralph. Like, I hope that video game companies were coming to them saying, like, hey, we have a bad guy. You want to put him in something? And I just think this is, like, I think Uncle Thomas and I were talking about this. Like, it just looks like the movie of the year. That I'm more excited for this than I was for Brave, than I will be for Monsters University, than any of the Pixar stuff. Like, yeah. This is, like, I'm also excited for Paranorman for some weird reason.
I don't get that one. I think it's the fat kid that you love.
Maybe. I just like the whole style. I liked, the one with Coraline. I like that pretty well. But Paranorman looks like more my speed. But Wreck-It Ralph is... I just feel like what Pixar should have been doing instead of whatever they've been doing and are doing.
I think that it seems to have a really distinct feel because it has the celebrity... Well, I guess a lot of them had celebrity voices, but this one, it has those celebrity voices where you can tell they're going to be catering to an older crowd a little bit on purpose. You know, like the DreamWorks movies where they always throw in a few adult jokes and adult references that kids are never going to get.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks like
it has the heart to back it up.
Yeah, or the references to video game characters that kids don't understand. Yeah, I think they like it.
And I think they won't have to understand it because there's going to be enough heart and plot
in
it for them. But then, yeah, people like John C. Reilly does the voice of Wreck-It Ralph.
Yeah, and that's for us.
You know, and Sarah Silverman, Dennis Habert from 24, Jane Lynch. Like, so you're totally right. That's exactly
Dennis
who.
Dennis Habert are buddies.
I know.
I ran into him.
You
once.
Literally bump into him at Sundance.
Yep.
So do you have any others that you're looking forward to?
Not that I wrote down. There are a lot I'm looking forward to, but sorry, I didn't prepare that.
No, that's fine. I want to see Take This Waltz.
Even though depressing.
It's going to break my heart. It's the new movie from, who directed it? I can't remember. What is her name?
Oh, it's Sarah Pauley.
Sarah Pauley's new movie. And basically it's just Michelle Williams deciding if she's going to cheat on Seth Rogen. Hit a little too close to home.
I'm not Michelle Williams, though. You're just Seth Rogen.
It just, no one should cheat on Seth Rogen.
Right, that's how you feel. Like.
When he's being, like, the super, like, nice guy. Like, it wasn't like Seth Rogen's, like, beats her, and she's like, I'm thinking of getting out of this marriage. She's just like, I brought you flowers. And she's like, yeah, but... Look at that guy, right? Am I right? And, like, Seth Rogen meets him, and he's, like, totally, like, befriends him, and he's like, no, let's hang out with this guy. He's wonderful. And he's like, no, Seth Rogen. Like, you're just pushing her towards him. It's pretty hard. If they had cast Seth Rogen in Unfaithful, I would have lost it.
Yeah.
All right, that was episode 91. If you liked what you heard and you want to email us what you thought, email us at franklymydearpodcast@gmail.com.
If you didn't like what you heard, don't bother.
Tweet about it, because no one reads that.